My name is Harley Stroh, and I'm the line editor for the Goodman Games Dungeon Crawl Classics. And you are about to enter a dungeon of the Vorpal Network. Snickeder snack. Roll for initiative.
Hi, I'm Steve Kenson of Green Ronin Publishing, line developer of Mutants and Masterminds, and you're listening to The Gamer's Haven.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh! End of line.
This podcast is brought to you by
RPGNow.com, the leading source for indie RPGs on the web. Visit them at www.rpgnow.com and pick up a few PDFs for your electronic gaming shelf. They've got gaming products for D20, 4th Edition, Mutants and Masterminds, and a variety of other products as well. Check them out at rpgnow.com. And GMDice.com, one of the best sources online for dice of any kind for any game. You can look at their GM blog, roll virtual dice, check out their vast assortment of dice from 4-siders all the way up to 100-siders, and you get a random free die with any order over $10. Visit them at www.gmdice.com.
Vorpal Network is the bomb. The cutting edge of geekdom. Comics, advice, D&D. Movies, video games, RPGs. Finding it's easy, just stay calm. VorpalNetwork.com.
Well, welcome back to the Gamer's Haven podcast. We've obviously been away for a little while, although I don't know when this actual episode is going to hit the airwaves. Yeah, and stuff.
We haven't recorded for a while, I guess should be the statement.
Yeah, you know.
I think we had you had a considerable backlog of episodes that we needed to post.
Yeah, as of right now, we're recording on April 27th. I think I have about 5 episodes still left to edit, and I really don't think I'm going to get to edit those until after finals. So another 3 weeks, and maybe I'll get another episode up.
I had a final just this last Friday.
Yeah. This semester has been rather brutal. Definitely not taking a class this summer. Going to relax and not do anything.
That sounds like a plan.
And, God, what else is news, I suppose, is my brother and his fiancée decided to postpone the wedding, so therefore I can go to Gen Con. Now, they didn't postpone the wedding so I can go to Gen Con. They postponed the wedding, therefore I can go to Gen Con. So I'm going to Gen Con with Nathan and Becca.
Yay.
Yes, they're being kind enough to let me stay in their hotel room and hitch a ride with them in exchange for horrible, like, you know, perverse favors and slavery and money.
And gas money. And
which is all really about the same with gas money. I mean, it's... I'll have to sell things into slavery, too.
Yeah, the types of acts that have to be done nowadays to get a gallon of gas are pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
$3.53 a gallon.
Yes.
But we're cheap.
Oh, yeah. But today we are, Nathan has chosen the wonderful topic for us today of young role-playing and all of that wonderful, what that entails, you know, young people role-playing and role-playing when you're young and, you know, how Cops and Robbers is essentially role-playing.
Yeah.
And how wonderful, I think we'll probably get a little bit into the whole, you know, perception of gaming, don't you think? Yes.
Called Diceless.
Called Diceless Gaming?
No, Diceless Role Playing.
Diceless Role Playing, okay. But Diceless is like evil.
Evil.
And wrong.
No, that's when you grow up and you realize there are dice.
Oh.
So when you're trying to...
Okay. So you're young and naive, you don't know that dice are there, so...
Well, no, you always crit when you're trying to kill the cows with lasers.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is that the cows never fall over.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, they're not playing. Well, they do if they're sleeping and you run over and knock them over, but we are in Kansas, obviously.
But if you're a kid, you know they've fallen over, or there's a horde of them and they've replaced it.
Exactly.
Like when you move the swarm up, instead of adding one to the beginning, you just take out one from the back.
Excellent.
Cows.
Woohoo, cows.
Got to shoot something. Like
yes. Did I mention the special guest we have today? We have Nathan's significant other and better half, his wife Becca, is with us today again, sort of remaining over since the chicks in role playing segment.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for her to throw things at me.
The lair is so clean.
Yes, I know. She showed up and just started cleaning. Where's Paul? Where's Mansquito? I haven't seen him.
Paulina? I think she got him with Raid.
Oh, God. We'll have to... Jeremy, did you clone Paul again?
No.
Go clone him again. We'll get another one out there. And, you know. You let him out? Well, okay.
He's stuffing.
That's good, I suppose. I mean, she already ate the neighbors. Oh, well. Well, we'll be back after this.
Gamers Haven and the Vorpal Network, in association with Pinnacle Entertainment Group, present. A Thousand Monkeys Production.
Deadlands. Enough room to die.
An actual play recording of Deadlands Reloaded. Available for download at www.CanadianCrusaders.com.
This is the Vorpal Network.
Today on the Gamers Haven podcast, we are
going to talk about
young role players and role playing when you're young and everything that entails from that. But as we sort of touched on in the intro, is I think role playing when you're young. I think what are we thinking of when we're saying young role players, like below 10, below 15, below 30?
Well, it depends on what you're talking about, because most young kids, except for the boring ones, will have adventures and things like that. So
they will role play in the literal sense of the term.
They were, you know, pretending to be knights and army men and cowboys and possibly Indians and space.
If you got stuck as being the bad guy,
mm-hmm.
Which
always seemed to happen with me, but yet I always won. So.
Well, your imagination just won out, really.
Then there was, you know, always like playing tag with the magma rules. You know, the sand is magma and you can't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, you know,
called it lava.
The Cops and Robbers thing, or, you know, playing, you know, Terminator and, you know, Resistance from the Future when you're a kid. Well, was I the only one that did that?
Well, I was shooting cows with lasers, so I mean.
But you also lived out in the middle of nowhere.
That's true.
In Gardner, wasn't it?
No.
Garden City.
Garden City.
Actually, no, there was no cows in Garden City that I would shoot. That was actually when I lived in Baldwin.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't know you lived in Baldwin.
Well, I lived outside of Baldwin.
You survived?
I'm sorry.
Actually, it was kind of nice. We had a nice old farmhouse, and the guy had cows on there, old barns to crawl around in and, you know, step on nails. It was fun.
Sweet.
Yeah, I'm sure the nails part was fun.
Yeah, you just get shots. You're okay.
And then what I need is a tetanus shot every month.
No, it only happened once or twice.
And then you went out to Garden City and
then there was just big roads.
And there was what?
Very big roads.
Very big roads.
Wide and long.
One of the interstates went through Garden City?
No, these were the normal roads. They were very, very wide.
What, did they expect a lot of people to move out to that city or something?
No, there's just a lot of space.
That's true of some smaller towns.
Yeah.
They have very... So you can park on the side.
Yeah, you can park like two or three, you know, families of cars.
Wide?
Mm-hmm. Wide and long.
They have bad drivers in little towns.
Well, that's a given.
And then we just played, you know, nights and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is something people don't really think about, that I think anyway, that young kids do a lot of role-playing on their own, and it's something that, you know, some people grow out of and some people don't. And, at some point in their life, it becomes a sort of a stigma. And, you know, it's like, oh, hey, you're how old and you're still, you know, you're still playing quote-unquote make-believe.
Well, actors are role-playing.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a bit more accepted.
Yeah, but some of them are creepy.
Well, it could be that actors were killed on, you know, they could be killed for acting.
Back
in the day, so...
But we live in civilized times now, don't we?
No, we don't.
We don't?
We live in modern times, there's a difference.
Never mind then. I'm sorry.
Civilization is a red herring.
Civilization is a red herring.
Oh, wait, no, that's communism is a red herring.
Oh...
Civilization is an illusion.
There we go. We, I suppose we can start talking about a little bit the, you know, the first gaming experience thing is getting, is role-playing with young kids. I think lately more games have come out that are, I think, more appealing young kids.
Yes, like that fairy tale game that I got.
Yeah, because you guys have Fairy's Tale.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be really good and really along the lines for, well, young role players and geared towards that.
It's obviously for young role players.
Yeah. Have you guys read it yet? Or
I have.
Yeah, okay. Is it more geared towards little girls or is it more universal, do you think?
Girls.
It's girls. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. All the character statements in the book are all... She.
Mm-hmm. They do have male characters in the book, but
it's obvious from the
really emphasize girls.
Mm-hmm.
The female. They actually even emphasize the female fairy.
Do you think it's harder to get into gaming when you're young, when you're a girl, or is it easier to do it with Fairy's Tale? As I had asked, do you think it's easier to get into gaming as a young girl than it is, say, like, from our perspective as a young boy, because we got brought into it by family mostly, I think.
Yeah, at a very, very young age on my behalf.
HeroQuest. Well, I mean, HeroQuest was just awesome in general.
Man, I've been playing role-playing games before I even heard of HeroQuest.
I had an uncle who did RPG. I forgot about that. Family. I guess that would be family.
But
my brother.
Do you think
my dad.
Do you think it's easier?
For boys
than it is for girls now?
The type of role-playing that we do, yes, I think it's easier for boys.
But if say, when you were a little girl, if someone had given you a copy of Fairy's Tale, would that have spiked your interest?
Maybe. It's hard to tell you now that I'm almost 30 years old. I never got into this type of role-playing until... I never even knew about it till high school.
Mm-hmm.
If that tells you anything. The most I probably did when I was younger was something like House.
I think it, as kids, we reach a certain point. We're especially as young kids, we're encouraged to use our imagination, and then it reaches a point where it's sort of that encouragement, I think, stops.
They go, okay, enough imagination. What,
like,
now play
like, for me, I think it really was more around like third, fourth grade. They really stopped doing that. And that's, you know, when you start learning, need to learn math and all that crazy crap.
Yeah,
and
it was like, all right, enough playing with imaginary people. You need to play with real people.
Right, right. And where they dump you in into the real world situation. And I mean, sure, that's a good thing. But I don't think I think nowadays it's much more accepted to have the to be a bit more of a introvert, especially as a kid. You have a lot more outlets now, especially with the internet and all that.
Wow, the wonderful internet, where any kid can get anything that they could possibly ever want.
Woohoo!
Anything.
An ale. What? No whores and ale for kids?
Okay. We try to refrain from them getting hold of that stuff, but yeah.
Well, you know. Internet gives you everything. We all know the internet is just for porn, right?
Yep. A Russian one, or a Brazilian one, no less. That's just disturbing as all get out. But
and large quantities of Viagra, apparently.
Well, I'm not so sure about that, but my emails certainly tell me that's true.
Yeah. We won't get into the whole spam discussion. That's just entertaining.
This is about youth gaming.
Yes. But, I mean, when we were kids, I never knew of any. I know you. Did you grow up in Lawrence?
I grew up in Topeka.
You grew up in Topeka. Okay. Yes.
I used to play role playing games or play with guns and shoot people.
Woo-hoo.
So I went the introverted route.
Well, and Jeremy, you predominantly grew up in Garden City before you came out for junior high school.
I
know.
Played with guns and shot people.
Sweet.
Not real guns. They were wooden guns.
No, see, the guns in my town were real guns.
Oh yeah, it was Topeka, the black hole of Ravenloft.
And we also played, swords and forks and all that kind of stuff.
But, I mean, when I was a kid, I don't remember really any really sponsored organization or anything like that in encouraging gaming or anything like that. There's nothing around where I was.
Not where I was at either.
Nothing organized. I mean, there was Monopoly nights, and you could really go off of that.
The family game night. I like to see that sort of evolve, too. I mean, as you get older, there are enough board games and really cool games out there now.
Well, there was in the schools, actually. Our school had a advanced class, basically allowed you to get out of class. And the year I was in it, they didn't do this, but the year before, they actually had D&D.
Oh, nice.
Because it was for...
what school was it?
It was the junior high in Garden City.
And then you came out to the wonderful place in Lawrence, yes.
Now, the year we did it, though, they did something with building cities. But anyway, they had a D&D. The teacher that was in charge of this was like, thought it was a good teaching tool for this advanced class because it allowed individuals to, be something they were not. So there was, I don't know if the parents knew, but they were playing some D&D and stuff. And we used to do, actually before that, in one of the other advanced classes, we used to do, it wouldn't really be role-playing per se, but things like, you are going to visit Egypt. You're visiting Egypt. Now build your tomb. And we built tombs. And, you would imagine it. And it was like simple role-playing, in some ways. It builds your foundation, and it allows for creativity.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only in the advanced. That's in like the classes where
the special class.
Yeah, where like you've done all your homework, everything's fine, and you're getting such good grades, you get to do these other classes, and you hate math, so.
I was in one of those. We built ships out of tables and sat on the table and sailed there.
It was for creativity and it advanced the mind. That's all role playing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and that was organized, but I think what you mean, what KU has, but for
Cougar.
Younger individual. No, I'm talking
I don't remember ever in any of the schools I went to there being, except for obviously KU, the time I was there, being like a gaming club or anything like that.
There was at Lawrence High for a while when I was there.
Really?
Yeah, there was. There was a role-playing game club, and it died a horrible death because they couldn't get enough members.
I never heard of it. If I had heard of it, I probably would have gone.
But then we have to also take into account, though, the acting. and you have to take into account there are acting clubs. I mean,
there's tons of drama clubs everywhere, and it's much more accepted, but so similar to
just no dice
gaming. You know,
it's diceless role playing.
It's a lot of improvisation, right?
Yeah. But also, you know, you got to remember that as we grow older, our minds grow a lot more organized, and the free-flowing creativity that we had as a child is no longer there as much. That's why we have rules for games, because it helps structure. We need the structure. We want to have, you know, the fun, but it is difficult as you grow older to just come up with, you know, I wouldn't go out and pretend to shoot cows now with lasers.
No, you'd use a real one.
Crazy. But back then it was fun. I wouldn't run around with, let me take that back. There was a fun and no politics involved. I might do some sort of Nero type game. Huh. But I wouldn't run around my house with a wooden sword.
And beat on your wife.
And, I was a little kid, I had a wife. That's a brother's problem.
It's true.
I'm talking about now.
Oh, well, no. We wouldn't go to, any of the live action places.
Oh, God, no. Too much politics.
So, I mean, from what I'm getting from this is, as far as when you're young, more the quote-unquote gaming role-playing that you do is falls more into the live-action stuff.
It'd be live-action and diceless would be the equivalent.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole, haha, found you, bang, bang, hi, you're dead.
Mm-hmm. I remember they had these monster toys. They were little plastic.
Monsters in my pocket.
Yes. Those came out. And we had a whole club going of different monsters. And everybody would pick a monster out of a bag, and that's what they would play. And we turned my dad's garage into a lab, and
Even not with the monsters in my pocket. I mean, I did it with G.I. Joe guys.
You did G.I. Joe, Star Wars.
I actually had that.
You have whole storylines going with your G.I. Joe guys, and you know, and oh.
Well, yeah. I remember walking off with Dad's automotive books because they were so thick, and the words in it were just ridiculous. And as a kid, I didn't know about automotives, but I used them as spell book. It was all gobbledygook, but it was a prop.
Sure. Yeah, I actually had remember that Evil Genius Make Your Monster Lab toy where you had like the it was like Play-Doh that you molded around like a skeleton, you put it in this liquid and the stuff melted off. I actually had that, and I played with that. I'd make monsters and then be like, no, you tried to go against me, die!
I mean, I had G.I. Joe guys, and if you remember those, the constructs.
Yes, I remember constructs.
And I'd make little, like, literally, looking back now, I made little mechs for them, you know, and they walk around in robots and fight each other.
Well, HeroQuest was introduced. Yeah,
which is, well, it's BattleTech.
When I was introduced to HeroQuest, and early on to Warhammer, I couldn't afford Warhammer, but I could afford some of the books, so I'd give stats to my Lego guys, because I had tons
and,
of Lego.
And yeah, when we were kids, we had, like, HeroQuest and some really cool board games. Yeah. I mean, I had HeroQuest, I had, if you guys remember that game, Dark World.
Yes, I do.
HeroQuest clone. I mean, it was very much like it was. I think it was Milton Bradley. I think put it out.
Milton Bradley put out HeroQuest.
Then it wasn't. It was the other company.
Parker Brothers.
Simple games like Monopoly.
I don't remember who it was. It might have been. Might have been Hasbro. I really don't know.
Any of these games, any of these toys. I mean, role playing is actually. It's like anything for humans. If you really think about it, it's just another way to explore your creativity. I mean, it's kind of like an artist who is painting. Or creating something.
Trying a different art style or a different...
You're just thinking about different things. So, children do it all the time. It's just sometimes as they get older, they look for some organization, or they're introduced into a game by, you know, a family member, and it's cool. And then you can find other people who do it, too.
Yeah, I look at it, it's like I used to play all those old adventure games on the computer, and pick up the new ones nowadays, and I sit there and I'll work on a puzzle problem for like an hour or something that I could figure out in 3 minutes flat when I was younger, and I just can't do it anymore because I'm not as creative as I used to be.
Well, I think unfortunately a lot of computer games and the console games and stuff have really destroyed a lot of the child's
Mattel.
Imagination.
Dark World was put out by Mattel, just so we know.
Yeah, I never played that.
But, I mean, I heard of it, but I never played it.
But apparently there were two expansions for it that I never knew about.
Girls still had, you know, a lot of... Toys is the main thing. It's like, you know, yes, it's the normal gender, you know, boys get trucks and guns, girls get dolls, you know, and that's a bunch of bull, and you play with whatever you want. But, I mean, there is a lot of opportunity, but unfortunately our society just has a tendency to put a stop on things.
Right.
Because I remember we ran around with the girls, too, and we would role play. Yes, we were mean and we'd push them into the lava, but we were, you know, eight. What do you expect? But I mean,
sort of our equivalent of dipping their pigtails in inkwells, I guess, you know.
Yeah, but lava was more
violent.
Interesting. Then they would get up there and push.
I mean, and we were raised in a generation where we pretty much always grew up with a TV, more or less.
Which, I mean, that was still, I think that has attributed.
We also had cartoons that didn't suck, but that's a whole other matter.
Well, that's true too. But I think the TV, though, as TV gets more and more, and you have instant gratification, basically. You can watch whatever you want. That destroys creativity also.
But also, I mean, I think we come from a generation who we had a bit more of a hands-on parentage, too.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
my parents didn't set me in front of the TV and leave me there.
Whereas, you know, the public education system and all that didn't really encourage my creativity after a while. I know my parents at least did, and I'm pretty sure your guys'
parents
did, too.
It was really up to the parents. It's not up to the schools. Mm-hmm. The schools are there to teach.
I think the problem now is the parents just expect it that the schools do everything,
which is
that's still not the case.
And that's where storytelling and stuff comes in. I mean, my mom was very good at this, where, you know, she read through The Hobbit and read through Lord of the Rings, and then would tell us stories about those. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you do that with your children, they're going to grow up, and maybe they don't want to do D&D, but they may want to do some role-playing stuff. I mean, and quality role-playing stuff, you know, not like lady.
Well, you know, like I said, my brother handed me a copy of Marvel Superheroes role-playing game when I was in fifth grade, and said, "Here, you'll like this," and pointed at this book that said Rifts on it, and said,
"Don't ever play that game."
So.
Hey, we discussed the use of Pladium books last night, though.
We did, and
they're good pee catchers for cats that like
good pee catchers.
Exactly.
That like to pee on
so
your.
So they
books.
Do have their
they have their
they
use.
Have their uses, but now there are so many other companies that can fulfill that use, really.
Yeah, like what's that?
Mongoose
Publishing?
Avalanche Press. But you know, we're going off on a nice tangent again, aren't we?
Yes.
But I think what we're getting at is the whole role-playing has always been there for children. It's just, it's creative.
How we do it is different.
Yeah, how they do it. But then when you get into the actual games themselves, I remember getting a hold of the D&D rules cyclopedia. That's not actually what it's called.
Civilopedia.
No, it was the cyclopedia.
It was the cyclopedia. Yeah, you still have that book.
Book? No, I don't have it anymore.
Oh, you don't?
My book. It had
that
a
came out
on the front.
That came out. Didn't that come out near the end of Second Ed? Or
no?
It came out near the beginning of Second Ed.
Yeah,
really?
It was before Second Ed. Because
okay.
This is the one that had. You had elves were
how old were you when that came out?
I don't even know. But I know I bought it brand new from Hastings.
They must have done different print runs of it then, right?
Something.
Because I mean, I know I've seen copies of it, and it's got to have been the new one.
Because it was white, and it had
like a cool dragon with a guy riding a horse in the front.
With I don't know if he was on a horse. I know there was a giant kind of worm-like dragon. And basically, this was the one where dwarves could get up to 12th level, and they were always fighters.
You had clerics. Elves were fighter mages.
Mm-hmm. You had clerics. You had halflings were rogues.
Mm-hmm. And you had humans, which could
humans
be
could
clerics
be
or,
fighters,
or fighters.
Mages. And possibly clerics. But there weren't gods. They were just...
See, the original...
picture of it?
Yes.
Because there were siege weapons in it, and that's what really got me on it. I'm like, cool, we can introduce siege weapons into our
games.
But that was the first like actual book, and then HeroQuest came along.
And that came out in 88.
We played the beginning paper. It was with my uncle, and I asked for it after we played it.
A tiny picture, but...
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. So it says that came out in about 91, so...
Maybe I got it afterwards, then.
As far as I know, it was the collection of the rules and whatnot. And,
maybe that's what.
And obviously, advanced. The actual second edition advanced came out like in 82,
yeah.
83.
My first D&D book was the red box set.
Yeah, there was
the red basic set.
What is the box set that had? Because I still have the figures from it. It was basic D&D. You already had races and classes. Then you, I remember one of the guys, he looked like a, his name was Axel. I remember that. I have that figure. It's paper. They're all paper figures. And my uncle played that, and I got a hold of that, and then HeroQuest, and then that. But I was so sure that that came before, but I might be confused.
Yeah, okay. Well, AD&D's second edition came out in 89.
Okay, so that one...
And so Cyclopedia came out 2 years later.
Okay. So...
Yeah, so you're right. No, no, I mean, and okay. See, I get my dates mixed up with that, but in...
But that was my first official D&D other than what my uncle ran. But I think that might have been the Red Box also.
Yeah.
Did the Red Box have paper figs in it?
Yes, yes. Little cutout, like A-frame figures, yes.
Because I still own those.
Okay.
I have all my figs.
I vaguely remember that as the Red Box.
Those are really freaking old. Those are as old as I am.
Oh, yeah, if not older.
I mean,
yeah, Red Box D&D came out in 83.
I had Redbox D&D, but I didn't get it in 83.
I didn't get it in 83.
Yeah, it came out in 83. Before that, in 77, it came out in a blue set, in a blue box.
I'm pretty sure I've got...
Ted has a white box.
I don't know.
It's two of them.
Is it tiny? Like that?
Like this big.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's like old first edition stuff.
Yeah. I just know my brother and I used that rules.
I mean, that's like, we're talking 74.
The Rules Cyclopedia.
He's got two of them. One of them is steel and plastic,
like
so...
Like crazy. And we had parties of like 8 individuals... And we'd run around and kill everything. I would GM, but I also play.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have, like, mountains of gold. We'd kill, like, this dragon and be like, okay, let's sit down and figure out our trip.
So would you say when you actually, as a young kid, when you break into role-playing, when you actually get down to the brass tacks and actually start doing D&D, Marvel superheroes, whatnot, do you think back then it was were our games more violent than they are now?
Yes.
It was a different type of violence.
Yeah, I mean, it was more cartoon, was not cartoon even cartoony violence.
It was
more video game, like classic video game violence.
You'd kill the monsters, you'd take their stuff, but you wouldn't describe like, okay, there's blood, you know, spraying all over the walls, or I stab him in the neck and his eyeballs pop out and goo goes everywhere. All right, are you doing okay eating over there?
Yeah, Jeremy, she's fine. You're not describing one of your frickin' ogres.
Thank you for not describing this.
Oh, God.
Anyway,
God. But no, we didn't have any of that. We just,
killed the monsters. There was more violence. We killed a whole lot more, but
it
wasn't descriptive violence.
When I was a kid, I mean, I played Marvel superheroes, and we would do like our dream matchups. You know, it's like, oh, man, I'm going to make Superman with the Marvel rules, and I'm going to have him fight the Hulk and see what happens. And,
but also, we didn't.
You know, it's like, we're going to have Captain Britain fight the Hulk. That lasted one round. It was so awesome.
We didn't have the moral issues either. You got to take that into account. When we were kids.
Oh, yeah. And you're not thinking of the, what are the ramifications or what, you know, social commentary can I make with this? And you know, it's like you're not trying to do this deep intellectual game.
You're doing
when
I
you're
want
a kid. I mean, especially now. That's like if you're a kid. Like when I was a kid, I ran the game too. I mean, I never played in a game under like my brother until he ran a Dark Champions game many years when I was playing.
Around. We didn't think anybody else would play. So it was my brother and I would run it because I knew the rules because he was younger.
Right.
And I would run and play, and he would play, and we'd run into monsters, and it was basically like HeroQuest, but D&D.
Mm-hmm. And we still use the HeroQuest figures.
The maps in that book, by the way, if I could find just the maps...
For
that
the
world,
Cyclopedia?
Those were awesome.
I bet you can get it in PDF.
That world...
I thought that world was like the main world.
Was it Greyhawk?
No,
it was a different world.
Oh, it was Mistara.
They haven't done a Mistara since then.
Yeah.
Which was sad, because Mistara actually had some sweet stuff. But they had the Hollow World crap, which I never
got. Uh-huh. Well, you know, that goes into TSR and their setting heavy stuff in the latter part of their year.
Some of it was cool, but TSR just went crazy. They should have done source books. And actually, if WotC's listening, they should do source books again. Just individual source books.
Oh, well, yeah, we could talk about that in Random Encounters. They've they've made some announcements as far as what they're going to do with that.
Hopefully they'll do
something cool. I know with the Marvel Superheroes game that I would always run, always play, it was always along the lines of, you know, comic book battles and, you know, fighting who fight whom. And really, that's what we played until, God, I think we ran out... until I got Champions. And God, I don't remember how old I was when I started playing Champions. I want to say it was about... I want to say about maybe 12, 13, maybe.
I was...
Maybe 14, I can't remember, but I look back now and I don't want to run Champions ever again because it made my brain hurt.
I was six or seven when my brother let me start playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangers.
TMNT and Other Strangers.
Yeah.
Yes. The only remotely good system from Palladium.
I started playing D&D when I was 8. I got the red box, and I quickly bought the other boxes. There was like 4 or 5 boxes. I remember there was a green box and a blue box.
So do you consider it was a natural progression from what you were doing as a kid, you know, the G.I. Joe guys and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and doing your thing?
Oh, yeah.
And just progressing from that into a game?
Definitely. I would definitely agree with that statement, because it went from having... We actually used the
And you think that happens now? I mean, I don't think it happens now nearly as much as
well,
it
no.
used to.
Well, no. Kids don't have the same kind of toys that we did.
It depends on the parents,
but I think predominantly, though, now, I mean, kids have access to video game systems out the yin-yang. They've got TV that's getting to be on-demand TV.
It's the parents, though.
Oh, yeah.
If you go out and buy your kids the greatest video system, they don't really need them. A lot of kids just want it because
I know when we were kids, we had our brains to keep us company.
Yeah,
you know,
and
that's what we needed.
I had a Nintendo, but the fact of the matter was, as cool as a Nintendo was, it still wasn't as cool as playing D&D.
Yeah, you know,
and it didn't piss my grandmother off as much.
We progressed from a point where it was acceptable to have it's like have friends over, have a sleepover, and you'd run a game. Whereas nowadays you come over and everyone plays the Nintendo Wii or whatever, you know,
for a couple hours and everyone goes home.
For a couple hours and people go home, and it's sad that it's gotten to that point. And I wish that parents would, you know, and I'm not saying the sort of broad every parent does this. I'm sure there are, you know, there are parents, especially I think more parents that are into gaming like we are, would teach their kids more, you know, more respect and more, you know, here you can play your video game, but here, you know, here's the D&D basic set equivalent, you know, read this and that's why we're seeing games like Fairy's Tale come out now, I think.
But some of it comes from just the simple fact of reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our parents, I'm not saying all of our parents, but a lot of our parents read books to us and then made us read books.
Mm-hmm.
But not to the point where it wasn't enjoyable. I can sit down and read a book and it's enjoyable. But you hear from a lot of children where they don't want to read the book because of all these factors we've stated.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fast enough. Now,
right.
I've got to admit, when I go on the internet, I don't want to read anything. I want to have my 5 seconds.
Well, neither do I. I hate reading stuff on the computer.
No, but a book, a good book, you want to sit down, you want to spend your time, you know, hours on end reading that book. And I think that helps us a lot. And I think it helps children a lot. And
another thing I think, like, I think comic books are an important thing. Because, I mean, it's reading, at least, you know? And it's holding paper in your hand and reading it.
But even other books that have nothing, just the fantasy elements. And I'm not talking about fantasy worlds necessarily, but just the fantasy element of a book.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what type of book it is, I mean... Watership Down, depressing as all hell, but great book. And if you think about it, if you read that at a certain age, you actually like, well, these, you know, rabbits, but they're the whole society, and it makes you think. I mean, it's great. But I think that's part of our issue. Children have so many instant gratification, and their minds are turning to mush.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention stigma. Think about the stigma that gamers used to have. That's not true anymore.
I think the stigma still exists. It's just a different type of stigma.
It's a different type of stigma, but think about...
Do you think that stigma has... I mean, when we were kids, it really wasn't a big issue when we were young kids. But do you think now, though, that age bar has moved down and that if, you know, you're 8, 9, 10 years old and playing D&D...
It depends on the situation.
I mean, whereas it was fine for us... Do you think more people are guarded about that?
One thing the massive multiplayer games have done, which I like, is they've made a lot of other games more acceptable in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
I can even, I mean, just as an example, I can talk to the strangest individuals that I know, and they'll be like, I played D&D at once when I was a kid, you know? I remember that. Mm-hmm. And instead of thinking, oh, well, that's weird, they go, really? You know, that's interesting. And I really think these massive multiplayer games, and I'm going to use World of Warcraft as an example, but there's tons out there. In some ways, those games are bad because they still help destroy creativity. But in other ways, I really believe they've helped because you have so many different types of people on there. Different types, you know, children from all different groups. Mm-hmm. You have so-called jocks on there. I mean, you have so many different types of people. And that, at least, has helped it. So I don't know. I think if we do it right, our children can play RPGs and still be... They're not necessarily... Being a nerd or geek isn't necessarily bad. They can laugh at it. And they can say, yeah, whatever, but I'm having fun. I mean, back in our day, it could be dangerous.
So, what was that quote from it? Have you ever been chased by the entire varsity football team just because you wore your cloak to school one day?
Vampires aren't even evil.
Now, there is taking it too far.
Right.
Obviously.
Well, I think gamers in general have a better sense of humor about themselves than really, I would say, any other group out there, any other, you know, societal niche. I think gamers like to make fun of themselves, and they can at least sit back and laugh at it. Whereas more other people, other groups, and other people get all, you know,
that's not funny.
But it's like, you know, you can't take yourself too seriously in life, and you gotta sit back and enjoy it.
You gotta laugh.
And I think that comes from our upbringing, from how, you know, how we were gamers and how we had that social interaction. And I think it's interesting how gaming is seen as an antisocial activity when it's not.
No.
When someone actually looks at it, it's not an antisocial activity.
The antisocial gamers are individuals you usually don't want to have anything to do with,
mm-hmm.
because they usually have other issues. That's why these conventions are really good.
Mm-hmm.
Gen Con and
Origins
and all those places are great because you have families coming in and playing different games.
And Gen Con is last year, you weren't there, but they started doing a really big family-oriented activities, and they have I think they're going to do it again this year. They had more family-oriented events, and more like last year on Sunday they had a deal where I think it was a two parents and two kids could get in for a Sunday event for like really cheap. I think it was something like $40 or something for all of them. I mean, it was literally
$28 a day normally.
And it was promoting, you know, come here as a family and enjoy these games. And you're getting more games out there, I think, that are family friendly.
That's why I like the Click games.
Uh-huh. Well,
are great.
I know we're sort of focusing on the whole. Fairy's Tale is more geared towards girls, but there's also that Bellisera, and it's apparently doing very well from what I understand. And I think that's awesome to see something being marketed out there for young girls, not just for young boys.
Do the horses have lasers?
No.
But they need to do a boy version with lasers. Boys though have always had Magic the Gathering. You know, Magic and Pokemon, whatever, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh!
There's a Warhammer 40K card game, too.
You know,
that's frightening.
Nobody wanted to teach me Magic. I watched it, and nobody would teach me how to play.
Well, it's because you were a girl. You're not interested in that.
Well, we still have tons of Magic cards.
And now we dance.
Like when Ben... When my buddy Ben isn't working as much, because he loves Magic, he and I will have a throwdown. You can join us if you want.
See, we should bring some Magic cards and throw down. The thing is, I don't want to buy any of the new ones because I can't stand them.
but some of the new things are cool. But some of them, you're right, are just like. But it's like anything. Magic went too crazy.
Uh-huh.
Clicks have gone too crazy. But they have a good niche for young gamers. They really do. I mean, the Clicks themselves, you get everything there. I have a figure. He's already painted. His stats are on there. I only have to learn a couple simple rules.
Well, like the D&D, you're talking about the D&D, well, not even that. There's also the D&D minis.
D&D minis? They're good for gamers, too.
And then, well, there's also the Star Wars minis.
Anything.
Obviously, all the WizKids stuff. There's Star Wars pocket models, the Pirates game.
HeroScape.
Even
something as simple as
we need to play that at some point. We really do. We need to throw down some heroes.
Especially with the rules that you can find online. Right, role playing. Because think about how it's so free-flowing. And also in Legos, no one dies. That's good for children. You don't necessarily want to have death. And that was something we did. I've got two younger brothers. For a while there, My brother and I, we played, and yes, there was some killing. When my youngest brother, we tried to get him on, we kind of thought about it. We were a little bit older, and we're like, we don't want to teach him about death. So no one ever died in the games. Like, he would play these characters, and no one would die.
Mm-hmm.
It would just be like, we defeated the enemy, and got cool treasure. Different time periods and stuff like that. But there's so many good things out there. And if parents just do their homework, they can expand on their child's creativity.
Mm-hmm. But apparently, Becca was just telling us that no one ever showed her how to play Magic the Gathering.
That's because she was a girl.
That's what I said. It's like, he's a girl. She has breath.
Well, at the time, she might not have.
See, that should, at some point in a childhood life, though, especially in the teenage, say, I'll show you how to play Magic. Here's some cards.
Yes, by the time some guys learn the, wait a minute, you're a girl and you want to learn how to play Magic the Gathering, by the time we realize we should be going, come over here and I will teach you.
Those guys, they don't know how to play Magic, but I know how to play Magic.
But shows up with this, when you lose, you have to remove an article of clothing.
Woohoo!
I wasn't the only girl who would sit and watch them either.
I know.
And if the guys would have just opened up,
I was almost the Grand Wizard Champion of Lawrence, by the way. Lost by 1 point.
Did he have a special hat?
No.
Why not?
He
had a special hat.
He didn't have a special hat.
You should get on that.
But, Magic the Gathering came out, and I guess Magic the Gathering is, and I think card games did that to an extent, was extended that, and gave younger kids another thing to do. I mean, especially kids go nuts for the Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon cards and all that crazy stuff. What's that?
They have a lot of those types of games that, they'll have competitions and stuff where all these kids...
Big tournaments,
yeah. Yeah, where they, at the bookstores I've seen them do it.
Oh,
Pokemon and stuff, yeah. All that. Yeah, the Pokemon is actually very good for kids. Not to mention, you can teach them to be good winners and losers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Again, that goes into the parents. That's something the parents need to work on.
So parents are very important in a child's role-playing because... I mean, how many times have you gone to a gaming store and a parent will walk in with a kid and they'll pick the wrong game?
Oh,
not
gosh.
Talking about
yeah, and it, that puts some of the that's put some of the responsibility on the gaming store.
Mm-hmm.
The gaming store should know what they're selling and
they should not
emphasize their customer service a bit.
Yeah, a 6 to 8 year old child, even a 10 year old child, really shouldn't get into Warhammer.
No.
They could use their parents' Warhammer stuff, but they should not be brought because that's just so much.
Well, then they have Warhammer. Warhammer is a good example. They used to do their different steps of stuff. I mean, they had HeroQuest was essentially Warhammer way light, and then they had HeroQuest Advanced, and they did Warhammer Quest, and then a step up into that was Battlemasters.
Mm-hmm.
Which was Warhammer Light,
Well, they have Battlemaster again. Battlemasters again.
It's still it's not out. Phil knows a guy who has a Paladin. The game's way out of print. But it's I asked him about that because he always has them. He's like, I know a guy with a Paladin of them. So it's like, oh, okay. But no, they're not back in print, but back when they came out...
HeroScapes has kind of taken over, and HeroScapes is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. HeroScape, to an extent, even the WizKids Clicks games.
The Clicks games, yeah.
Mage Knight's dead, but...
But you can still find Mage Knight.
Yes.
And you can use them for other things.
You can get them dirt cheap when you find them, because people want to get rid of them.
I almost purchased about 250 of them for a ridiculous amount of money, and I realized... I don't have them.
I could look for some at Gen Con for you, by the way.
You could. But I'd rather you...
Here's a trash bag full of Mage Knight. I got it for $3.
$1.50.
It's like, orcs?
Goblins? Sweet.
All orcs, goblins, and some random stuff. I have no... Who cares? It was $3.
Well, and the click stuff is great. I mean, I think that's just... It teaches them math. It teaches them role-playing. And I mean...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's another thing. I mean, how much have you learned from... Not only from gaming itself... But from reading those role-playing books.
Yes, especially the good, the well-written source books.
The ones that actually have historical information in them?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Even fake historical information is okay.
Even your, I think our vocabulary has gone up just from reading various RPG books. Because I know in, you know, I mean, how many kids in very beginning of junior high or end of elementary school, how many of those were reading, you know, 300-page rule books? Not many. Well, we were reading them, and we were figuring them out and understanding them, you know?
Well, how many of them could use Thaco?
Oh, God.
I still, to this day, love Thaco.
Thaco.
I know it's a terrible thing, but I mean, always loved to hit armor class zero. It was the old rules for AD&D second ed for hitting armor classes. Thaco stood for to hit armor class zero. Basically, unlike in this role-playing, I mean, in the current role-playing game where the better armor you have, the higher your armor class goes, then, back then, it was the better armor you had, the lower your armor class went. The closer you got to zero, the harder it was for monsters to
hit. In old edition, it was started at 10 and went down. Mm-hmm. And
so, like, full play would be, like, minus 6.
So you'd have an AC of 4.
You had a shield and stuff. Mm-hmm. So... No, you'd have like a minus 6.
It got ridiculously complicated. It was really dumb.
Yeah. And if you get into the negative...
But you know, and I was saying that, I'm sure some old second ed but players are going,
If you played a gnome with certain weapons, the weapon speed was stupid ridiculous. Two-handed, this little gnome would run up with his long sword and slice you like 300 times
before you actually...
you're dead!
But you know, second ed had its bonuses, you know, like Fighter Sweep.
Fighter Sweep. I hope they reintroduced that.
Or something like that.
I hope
Fighter Sweep?
We'll see.
Fighter Sweep was awesome.
I don't think I ever used Fighter Sweep.
It was basically, we used it all the time. Andrew was the king of Fighter Sweep.
Well, you played Pool of Radiance, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you know in higher levels of Pool of Radiance, when you walked up to like a line of bad guys or a line of kobolds, mm-hmm. and you'd attack and you'd attack each one of them, mm-hmm. that was Fighter Sweep.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, your fight because was so good.
You'd start attacking if you like multiple hit dice at a time or something
cleave,
like that.
There was
you know,
no
I don't.
Cleave was mm-hmm. not needed. You were like, I am the best.
Because you always try to get... Like, you go up against goblins or kobolds when you're high level in Pool of Radiance. You'd want them to get around you, and then you'd attack, and you'd attack each one of them around you and try to kill them all.
Which is Fighter Sweep.
Oh.
Fighter Sweep is an awesome thing.
First they replaced with Whirlwind Attack, which just didn't, wasn't the same thing.
Yeah.
Or Great Cleave, obviously. But the Great Cleave worked okay. I'm interested to see what they do in the new edition. You know,
we'll find out more about that
at
later.
At least introduce a Mook rule.
Yeah. Keep your feng shui out of my D&D. Whenever someone tries to introduce feng shui into my D&D, they rules it too much. They put too many rules on it. It's like, stop.
But D&D is about rules.
Yeah.
Too. So,
actually, but I think going back to it is those rules and reading those RPG books, I think, enhance the vocabulary, can enhance your understanding in your mind. And I don't think that's touched on nearly as much as it could be. Because I know, look how many gamers are out there and how many are intelligent people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, how many are in, you know, places of, now in places of wealth and power
games.
And, you know, and who's making the video games, who's making the movies, it's these people who are gamers. And they're there for a reason, because they stimulated that creativity and they stimulated their minds for so long. You just don't see that as much anymore, sadly.
I agree.
Alrighty. Well, I think we will be back after this. I think that's all we got to say on that right now. So we will return with our wonderful three-parter.
This podcast is sponsored by GMDice.com. You can never have too many dice.
This podcast is supported by RPG Now, the leading source of indie role-playing games, with over 10,000 RPG titles from over 500 creators and publishers. There are new RPG treasures to discover every day at www.rpgnow.com.
And we're back, and today on the three-parter, I've got a rant, Jeremy has got a wonderful review, and Nathan's got a gamer story for us. Since I mentioned it first, I will go ahead with the rant and get that all started. Today on the rant, it being end of April, everyone knows around what happened around this time is the Wizards of the Coast announced their GSL, their new game system license, which is replacing their OGL for 4th edition. And I'm not really ranting on the GSL itself. I'm actually ranting on the reaction of some people to this GSL and to this announcement, to the point where I am utterly flabbergasted and even at times sickened by some of the reactions people have had to this and how surprised people seem when they really shouldn't be. So many people are going off on their own little rants and their own just outright just ridiculous, pointless arguments over why WotC is this evil entity and why the GSL is this horrible thing and how, you know, screw them, I'm not going to do this anymore, and they're full of Satan and evil and all that. When you guys... I guess what I'm really ranting on here is jumping to conclusions. I'm not saying, hey, 4th edition is going to be awesome. I'm not saying, hey, 3rd edition is the best and sucked horribly, and 4th edition is going to be the best and 4th edition is going to suck. Whatever. What I'm saying is keep an open mind and don't prejudge something before you have enough information to react to it. And just because a company puts out a license or some such that you think personally is restrictive and is horrible. I remember the days when there was no OGL. I remember the days when you went to Gen Con and you went to the gaming store and there was D&D and then there was White Wolf and then there was a game system X, game system Y, game system, you know, Z, all this other stuff. Rather than 420 D20 books that are sitting on the shelf gathering dust, 90% of which are crap. If your favorite company is a company that wants to ride on the coattails of Wizards of the Coast and put all of their bank and their money on someone else's game system, exactly, then that's your own problem, and that is the horse that they decided to bet on. I think, for one, this new GSL that they've announced, I think, will promote, hopefully, more companies to do their own game system. And I think the term indie game is thrown around a bit too much nowadays when I think there are indie games out there, but I think back in the day, you know, back in the day 8 years ago when Third Ed was just coming out, there were a lot more, you know, independent role-playing games, and there were a lot more games that were not from the big guy, but you saw them, you saw D20, and you saw this stuff coming out, and then there was just this big glut, this big tidal wave of stuff that came out, and most of it sucked. And I think with the new 4th edition coming out, I'm going to be very wary about whatever comes out on the heels of 4th edition from Wizards of the Coast, because most of it, I think, is just going to be crap.
It's going to depend on the company.
And, you know, I'll keep an open mind and see what comes out, and I plan on picking up the 4.0 books. And but I also have no intention of getting rid of my 3.5 books. I'm going to make my decision when I have the evidence in front of me and what I see goes down. I think if you are getting all bent out of shape because Wizards of the Coast is deciding to protect its intellectual property, then move to Switzerland, because apparently they have much more lax copyright laws there than they do here. So I would say just chill out, people, and let the companies do their thing. We live in a corporate world, and we live in a world where companies will want to protect their interests. And of course, who's not going to look at a game like Mutants and Masterminds and think, man, I wish I had done a game like that? Mm-hmm. Wizards of the Coast is, of course, going to do things like this, and they want to promote their product. They want to promote that you buy their product. If you have a problem with a company doing that, then I don't see why you're running around in a capitalist society. Honestly, it's a free enterprise, and if you, it is not like Wizards of the Coast is sending someone to your house with 4th edition books and a gun, making you buy 4th edition.
Yeah,
being the operative term. If you don't want to buy 4th edition, don't. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying here is really if. With the whole GSL coming out, it's this divide between 3.5 gamers and the 4E gamers is just becoming this big rift in the gaming industry, and I don't think it's a rift that needs to be there, and I don't think every gamer needs to hitch their wagons to one or the other. I think you play what you want to play, and really, it's just one of those situations where I'm just getting kind of fed up and getting kind of tired of the whole experience, of the whole, of some people going on Slashdot or some people going on forum sites and speaking out and saying, hey, this is crap. I think WotC is akin to the new, Nazi party, when it's like, that's really ridiculous. And I think there are probably a great deal of old Jewish immigrants that would have something to say about that, and probably to the contrary. But that's really all I've got to say right now before I, start feeling it in the mouth. But really, it's just one of those really annoying things that I've been seeing lately and I wanted to voice my opinion on.
Well, and we forget that WotC is one of a multitude of evil corporations.
Yes.
So it's kind of unfair to just pick on them.
Yeah, they have nothing on Microsoft, right?
Mm-hmm. That is
and
true.
Google.
And Google is pretty bad. Yeah.
Now.
Evil.
But yeah, the fact of the matter is anybody who doesn't think that a company is not out to make a profit needs to recheck their thinking, mm-hmm. especially in a capitalistic environment, because yes. the whole goal of a business is to create and generate revenue.
At least in our society right now.
And I'm just sick of the outright ridiculous nerd rage that is going on right now.
When it's nerd rage.
It's like, guys, it's a game.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
Chill out and move on with your life.
Weird things that
no one's stopping from playing.
Like I said,
system.
No one is coming to your house with a gun to make you play 4th edition. No one is coming to your house with a gun to make you still play 3.5.
If Pathfinder keeps doing well, 3.7.
It's not like you go out and buy the 4th ed books and someone shows up to your house every month and takes $15 out of your wallet. If you don't want D&D Insider, don't get it. It's my whole thing. If you don't like the TV show that's on, change the channel. You have that free will to do this. And, sure, granted, you have this free will to, go online and do your thing and gripe and moan and do your bitching, but it's just, this attitude of I'm right and you're wrong and fourth ed sucks or 3.5 sucks is just, I don't think is going to be good for the industry, and it's just starting to make me sick. Anyway.
The Gamer's Story.
Well, for those of you out there who don't know, I've started playing a little bit of Warhammer 40K, and still play Warhammer Fantasy on a regular occasion when someone feels up to playing, considering it takes a lot of effort to move armies around the table.
Mm-hmm.
Especially at large points amounts. Well,
especially 40K armies, since they're not really easily squared up.
Yeah, no, they're look, it's a skirmish unit. I just move. I measure the farthest forward guy, and then I make sure everybody else in the unit is behind him.
Exactly.
It's like that's the easiest way to do it for me. But anyways, well, I was putting models together the other day, and I bought my wife a Hellhound for her Imperial Guard army. Got out of the box, started putting it together, and realized that.
I want to note, she's now looking at him lovingly. It's kind of sickening.
I got out of the box, started putting it together, and I noticed one of the metal plates for the turret was missing. It wasn't in the package. Mm-hmm. Like, oh well. So I didn't think anything about it. It was the second model I'd had like that. A couple months earlier, I'd bought an Ogre Yeti for Ogre Kingdom's army for my fantasy army, and he had no head. Which was very funny, because we looked all over the...
Ogres don't need heads.
Yetis
do,
though.
They're like cockroaches. You remove the head and they live for days.
Yetis do, unfortunately. And we looked all over, thinking maybe we had dropped it out of the package. It was nowhere to be seen, and it wasn't in the package. So I was like, well, it's the second model like that. I'm okay with it. And then I went down and bought a Ravener, which is a Tyranid model, for those of you who don't know different monster names. It's a giant bug, and it was missing its tail. So by this point, I'm like, well, I've got three models here. I need to place a bits order. You know, I got to get these replacement parts to make these models work. Otherwise, you know, I won't, if I ever want to go to a tournament, I won't be able to field them.
Mm-hmm.
So I called up Games Workshop. And I called them this last Wednesday. And I talked to the first guy. I said, hey, I need to place a bits order. He's like, excellent. How can I help you with that? And I said, well, here's what's going on. So I told him what happened. And he says, I can't help you. I said, what do you mean you can't help me? I need to place a bits order for three parts that I'm missing. He says, I can't help you. I'm going to have to transfer you to another department. I'm like, what do you mean you're going to have to transfer me to another department? I just need these three parts. Can't I just order these three parts, pay my $20, and go? He says, well, be that as it may, I can't help you. And so he transferred me. And I sat on hold for a little bit, and I heard machine gun fire and explosions and squealing tires and sirens and stuff, and, you know, from their Warhammer 40K, and was mentioning how closely it sounded like some of the large cities I've lived in my life. And then another guy popped on.
Sounded so much like Topeka.
Yeah. Well, another gentleman popped on, whose name eludes me right at the moment. It started with a T, I believe. And he introduced himself and said he was in customer service and asked me how he could help me. And I said, well, I don't know. I got transfer over here. Here's my problem. I just need to place a bits order for these three parts. And he says, well, we can't place a bits order for those three parts because those should have been in the box. And apparently if they were supposed to be in the box, they need to send them to me. So he asked me for the serial number off one of the backs of the packages. I gave it to him, and he got everything squared up and said that they'd ship that out to me and ship FedEx ground, and I'd get the three parts. I was like, great, excellent. So I can fix the Hellhound tank, and the Yeti can finally have a face, and I can have a tail for my Ravener, because the tails look kind of cool. They got like little spikes on them and stuff, but yeah, I digress. Anyways,
they're very pointy.
Yeah, well, most Tyranids are. If you ever want an army to lacerate your fingers and you like playing Warhammer 40K, go with the Tyranids. Everything's pointy. Everything. It makes Cthulhu look sad. But anyways, the doorbell rings Friday, and it's the UPS truck dropping off my bits parts. I was so excited. I looked down and realized the box was really big. So I'm looking at the box going, why did they send me such a big box for three we're talking itty-bitty things. You know, like 3 inches combined in length. Tiny pieces. And the box was incredibly freaking heavy. I'm like, okay, they didn't pack this thing full of styrofoam peanuts for three parts. So I start fussing with the tape, which is a pain in the ass to get off, of course. Open the box, and sitting inside the box are three packages. Not pieces. Three whole models. They sent three whole models for one part out of each package.
Still in the shrink wrap.
Still in the shrink wrap.
And on the blister packs.
And I was just kind of going, well, where's that's really cool, and I appreciate them for getting on it and shipping it out to me really fast. Now I have a ton of parts that I have no idea what I'm going to do for.
Still missing tails, a face.
A tail and a head. and a metal plate.
You did call them back, right?
No.
I would have called them back and said, well, thank you, but now I need a face, a metal plate, and a tail.
Yeah. Well, actually, the interesting thing is with the tank, I can either turn it into a Hellhound or it can be turned into a Chimera, which is a troop transport. So there are the parts in the box for a troop transport and extra parts for another Hellhound. Now, the funny thing is we opened up the Yeti to realize that the Yeti was missing a hand.
The Yeti's missing a hand.
So
now we can have a headless and headless Yeti.
Yeah. So that one works out great because I can throw the body in the
very
hand
special
away.
One that you talk about.
You should have one that's just torn apart.
Yeah.
You should have the Yeti standing on top of the torn...
The dead Yeti.
Yeah, that would work great.
That's ironic and funny.
But the Ravener is completely there, which still brings up the fact that once I put the tail from that package on the Ravener that was missing his tail, I still have a Ravener with no tail.
You should go on eBay. I bet you could get a bit.
I'm sure I could too. Yeah. But I thought it was interesting to note that I should say that what was interesting was is they said it would ship via UPS and it would take 5 to 7 business days. It arrived in 2. Not only that, but they shipped it Wednesday, like 3 hours after I talked to them. I mean, they were like right on the ball. So if you guys have any problems with your Citadel and Games Workshop stuff, call them. They will fix it. You know, in the past, that didn't used to be the way it worked. I mean, you had to jump through massive hoops. But as long as you have the proof that you purchased the items that you have problems with or have issues with, you know, you can give them the serial number on the object that you have that you have an issue with, like it's missing a part or the parts are damaged in some way or unusable. They will fix it for you, which is really cool because, you know, up until this point, you know, if you had a problem with a model, you were SOL.
From what I understand, Games Workshop have been really working on their customer service over the last year and a half.
Why don't you take the parts of the Yeti and the parts of the insect and create a demon?
And create a chaos spawn.
Yeah, create some sort of demon.
Because you can make a chaos spawn out of anything.
Mm-hmm. And then wrap
I'll just give the bits parts to Ethan. Ethan can do what he wants with them.
Yeah, I'll make a random chaos.
Because there's demons that have Yeti faces and insect hands and
claws, giant scything claws.
He won't need a tail. He needs insect legs though. And Yeti shanks.
Sure. Okay, Jeremy. But yeah, I thought I would share that with everybody. So apparently they've been overhauling their customer service a lot. Because it used to be if you had a problem, you really did. You had to jump through hoops to get any assistance. And now, I mean, I explained what the problem was. I gave them the serial numbers off I couldn't find the packaging for the Yeti. You know, I've had him for a couple months. But I still had the packaging for the Ravener and, of course, the Hellhound because I keep all the boxes that I have. So I gave him that information. He got those parts right back out to me. So they did a very good job, and I commend them on it.
The review.
Anyway.
I am doing a review on a core rulebook that we received called the Alpha and Omega. The main company that did it is Mindstorm Labs. This book randomly appeared in front of me one day. I'm not really sure how they found me, but that's okay. I think it was teleported in. Basically, it's the Alpha Omega, the beginning and the end. It was created and written by Earl, I think it's Fischel? Fish? And David Carter.
Sounds good.
Their website is www.alphaomegathegame.com. You can also visit mindstormlabs.com. I don't really know much about Mindstorm Labs. I didn't visit the website. I feel kind of bad about that. The book is... The first thing, when you look at the book, it has a really cool design on the front. But the book is made kind of like the new Star Wars books are made. They're shaped kind of odd. They're longer than they are. They're wider than they are tall, which I don't like. That it makes reading a little bit more difficult.
On top of that, it makes it a little bit more difficult to set on a bookshelf.
Yeah, it's hard to store. Now, first, that was irritating enough that I wasn't quite sure I was even going to read it. But I read this book from page one, from the Alpha, all the way to the Omega. And I gotta say, except for the character generation, the game itself looks really interesting.
What's wrong with the character generation?
It's too much.
Is it like Palladium?
It's
10-hour character generation for 5 minutes of play?
Not much, but it is a lot. Basically, the concept behind the game is in the middle of the 19th century, you had a writer who wrote a book called The Wheel and Other Stories. And at first, everybody thought it was fiction, but it turns out to be prophecies of what's going to happen in the future. And basically, in the late 2000s, war starts and all this horrible stuff happens, and the Earth actually basically fights against mankind because mankind is dropping nuclear bombs everywhere and chemical weapons. This is going crazy. And you had a time where the Earth basically just erupted and
all the major countries were destroyed. And what you had is you had city-states basically build up. And these city-states, let me give you... In 2049, Mother Nature exacted her revenge on humanity, wiping the Earth's surface clean and devastating the world through a decade of violent natural disasters. Well, in addition to that, you discover that there are two races, alien races, one that's basically based on what we think as angels, and one you think as demons. And these races, every 10,000 years, use the Earth as a war, basically a battleground. No one's sure why. And it's getting to that point where they are coming back. The city, they talk about the various cities that you can live in. Travel between the cities is very, it doesn't happen very often. Most people spend their whole lives in the cities. You have different cities. You have free cities, that type of thing. One of the more interesting cities was this city that has an AI. The whole city was built around an AI to protect itself. And it creates robotic soldiers. It's crazy.
Is it named the computer, and is the city Alpha Complex?
No.
Okay, then.
But you have various monsters, and you have a magic system called welding. And it's kind of convoluted, kind of complicated. I'm not really going to go into it. It's interesting, though. It's really free-flowing. There's a lot of things that you can do, kind of like in Mage. You are allowed a lot of freedom in how you cast things, which is nice. Basically, this is a fantasy sci-fi. You have bioengineered individuals. You have what's called the Evolutionary War, which would be basically like the angels and demons. I'm trying to find their name right now. Oh, the Seraph and the Ophanim. Yes. They are battling for Earth. Well, not actually battling for Earth. We don't know what they're battling for. And the book is pretty straightforward. It talks about role-playing. It talks about the different, what's happened on Earth. The Loth Foundry. That's the name of the computer one. Basically, it's a giant headquarter of Android Army 12. It's in the central plane of what was once Canada. And it was built to protect Loth, who's an AI.
L-O-T-H. Loth. Okay.
New York City is still around. A lot of the cities are big, humongous cities that are built up. They build up instead of out because it's safer that way. Vancouver's still around. But anyway, going through those books, you have different... You don't really have character classes per se. You kind of have careers. I like what they did in this book. The artwork is really neat. And this game would be... It would be good for someone to run. Just not me. Their weapon system and their combat system looks fairly harsh, actually.
It's not D20.
It's not D20. It's multiple dice.
Okay.
Cool. Basically, you start with like a lowest dice pool, but as you go up, you add more dice, and you add, kind of like how Star Wars, you add to, well, the old school Star Wars, you have a difficulty rating.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, your dice pool might be a dice 4 and a dice 6.
Right.
You'd roll those together.
Okay.
But you don't use all your dice. You have to choose like the higher numbers and such. And you get bonuses and things like that. But for character creation, you have things like core qualities. Then you go into secondary qualities. And then third qualities, and then you have your health pool. Oh, and then you have abilities and drawbacks. And it just keeps going, and it seems... I don't know. I would have to play through one of these, and we haven't had time to play test it. If you like a game, though, that has a very nice backstory, that has fantasy elements but is very sci-fi-ish that takes place on Earth, I would love this game. I just hope they don't continue with this book binding.
Yeah, the book is 8.5 by 11. It's standard book size, but it's bound at the top of the book rather than on the side of the book. So it's a landscape style book.
And I don't like that. But
yeah, that's just aesthetically. I'm obsessive compulsive, I guess. It would stick out of my bookshelf, and it'd look kind of weird. But
their magic system is very open. I do like that. There's a lot of things that you can do in this that you can't do in other systems. You just basically have... But again, it comes up with difficulties because you have to build... There's an equation you use to find out the difficulties of actually casting your magic. And whenever you have an equation in a game, that slows it down. So that is an issue. So I'm kind of torn on this game. I mean, I like the backstory. I like the science in it. I like the races. I'm not so sure about the mechanics. So this is the Alpha and the Omega. I'd at least look at it. If it's in your gaming store, look it up. It's maybe you would use it just for source material, or maybe you would run it. I don't know. Like I said, kind of torn. I can't give maybe a thumbs up and a thumbs down, I guess. That's what I'm going to have to go with.
All right, well, I would tell our listeners to check our website for our show notes, and we'll put the specs on the book up and
you'll see
link to their website and get you pricing and all that on it. So
in the back of the sheet, in the back of it is the character sheet, and it's kind of...
Complex. Kind of daunting.
It looks like it's five sheets.
It's brand new. And the problem is it's like this. I don't know about their website. Maybe they have them printed differently.
8.5 by 11 instead of 11 by 8.5.
Just on a flipboard.
Right.
It just doesn't really.
It strikes me. It looks like an interesting book and good source material, but it strikes me that the binding on it just sort of strikes me as an attempt to be different. That. Is an obvious attempt to be different, you know?
Actually, I want to explain that real quick. I want to explain better what they use for the dice. They have what's called dice pools. And you have quality scores. So let's say you have a strength of 15. Well, you look at the quality score chart, and you'll notice that your dice pool is 1 dice 6 and 5 dice 4. So that's what you would be running. But if you had a quality score of 28, you would roll 2 dice 8 and 4 dice 6.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it just goes up from there. Now, that could be fun. I mean, a lot of people like to roll a lot of dice, but that could also be kind of daunting, too. I mean...
But do you think it looks... this game is sort of sci-fi, science fantasy type of game, and it's a sort of would fill your like a space opera with space opera fantasy. No space. Okay. This is on Earth. Okay.
They do not have spaceships.
Okay.
Earth is just. I mean, they have technology.
So sort of post-apocalyptic fantasy.
Yeah.
Stuff.
The only but high technology. That's the thing.
It's a high tech fantasy.
Sci-fi fantasy without space travel. We are stuck on Earth. We are actually trying to rediscover our planet. Everything has collapsed outside the city. It's not like you could go out in the city and be attacked by a giant flying reptilian mosquito from the mutagen.
And it is a beautiful book. I think it's just full color.
Actually, the artwork is very good.
And the art looks beautiful. The book is put together very well.
And as I said, the races are neat. Like one of the races, the Remnant. They are people that were actually in, their ancestors were in the nuclear fallout areas.
Mm-hmm.
So they were changed. They have all sorts of creepiness done to them. You have bioengineered individuals. Well, we know what that is, because they're individuals that are built for something. You have, let's see, the Nephilim, which are the basically children of one of the other races. They have some religious type things. The Grigori, Again, the Anuke, which they're related to kind of the sci-fi fantasy ones. You play artificial intelligence, which is cool. There's one other race that somebody's standing on right now. Human, well, obviously humans. But, like, they have them all listed here, and it's neat. It's kind of, you know, it reminds me of
Gamma World,
or, well, yeah, kind of. I was actually thinking of Cyberpunk. It's very cyberpunkish, just more wilds, more destruction. But like I said, no space travel. They don't have any space travel, and no one's sure why these alien races are coming back.
Sounds very interesting.
Check it out.
I'll put all necessary information in the show notes if you want to check out, see what the book looks like, and see the website, that sort of thing, and see how much the book is. I'll put it in the show notes. So. And we will be back after this.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
Hello, this is Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica. When you play a role-playing game, do you like to have your own dice? GMDice.com is one of the best selections of dice on the internet. From stone dice to metal dice and even bone dice, GMDice.com is your dice store.
Get the newest releases at RPG Now. Only at RPG Now can you get the absolute latest and best releases from fantastic publishers like Fat Dragon Games, Green Ronin Publishing, and Wizards of the Coast. There are new products every single day. Come to RPGNow.com and get them the instant they're available.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. You can find us on the web at www.canadiancrusaders.com. The Gamers Haven Podcast is a member of the Vorpal Network at www.vorpalnetwork.com. Gamers Haven and Thousand Monkey Productions are copyright 2008 and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 3.0 United States License, some rights reserved. Stop by our website to check out our actual play feed, fill out our feedback guest book, or hit us on the forums. Music on the show is used with permission by Joe Hero Band, www.joehero.com, and this has been a Thousand Monkeys production.
Friday night and we're headed for the drive-in. You were mad at something you thought I said. Thought a night out with you and me and DC would make everything alright. Thought you might like an Evil Dead marathon, watching Ash wreck and shop with his chainsaw. You were gone before he made it to the woodshed. Now I'm standing here alone.
And we're back. Today on Gamers Haven Podcast, we are doing we're not doing Young Role Players. That would just be kind of odd.
Edit that out. Yeah, that needs to go away.
I definitely need to edit that part out. More work for me. Today on the...
After Ethan gets done doing the Young Role Players, the rest of us are going to call the police. Sorry, Ethan.
We're not even going to wait for him to finish.
I think you guys just better call the cops now and have me taken away.
Yeah.
Alright, anyway. Do you guys remember the D&D helpline?
No.
I'm pretty sure it was some kid in a box somewhere.
Kid in a cardboard box out in the alley?
We called him for a rule question once. It was an 800 number, so I don't even know when this was. I don't have it anymore. But, I remember he was the rudest individual I've ever spoken to.
Well, this was back when it was TSR, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
So that answers that question. TSR, they are so rude. Okay, there you go.